And now, please help me welcome our speaker, Kendall from the Newport Breakdown Group in Newport, Delaware.
My job here today is to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I'm going to back it up. I have a sponsor, and a sobriety date is June 1st, 2010. I have a sponsor, and I have a sponsee, and my sponsor has a sponsor, and they are just amazing people. I can't wait to talk about them when I get into what it's like today. But, growing up, I grew up in a really, really nice home. I don't have, like, any excuse for the way that I turned out, so to speak. My mom is a Buddhist. She's from Thailand. She's, like, the most amazing person that you've ever met. If there's a person who is not alcoholic, who doesn't suffer from a spiritual malady, that would be my mom. She's the kind of person who just loves, just lives in the moment, and, you know, she's an angel. So I didn't get my alcoholism from her. My dad is Scottish-Irish. So I think we all know where I got my alcoholism from. He's also an awesome person. He is an amazing public speaker, so I didn't get that from him. But he's a politician. He's been so since I was young. So growing up, I was always sort of in the spotlight because of my parents and, you know, I always felt like I had to be a certain way. I always felt like I had to be, the perfect, good girl. And actually, things were pretty good when I was, a little kid. It was weird. Growing up, I was very close with my creator. I always felt this, connection with some sort of higher power. I would walk around and, talk to him, just creative sort of ways, but I could feel around the age of 6 or so some sort of spiritual malady manifesting itself, and I didn't know what that was for a long, long time, but I felt different. I absolutely felt different for a long time, and I'd say in kindergarten is when the F's really hit the fan. Because I walked in on my first day and I was so ill equipped to live life as a kindergartner. And I was very resentful because, as a kindergartner, I was nobody told me what I'm supposed to do. Nobody told me how I'm supposed to be. Nobody told me how I'm supposed to talk to these kids. And I don't know if all kindergartners walk around pissed off like that. But I was, and I cried on my first day, and I think a lot of people do that. But what was pretty amazing, there was this girl, Laura Matthews, and she took me aside when I was crying, and she said, this is what you're going to do today. Let me show you around. This is what you're going to be. And, this is where you're going to color. This is your teacher. And, the amazing thing was, it was her first day of kindergarten, too. and so, for the rest of my life, I was going to walk around feeling like I didn't have the directions. I didn't know what I was supposed to do, and everybody else knew. Everybody else was kind of was Laura Matthews, but they weren't as nice. So I'm going to forget her. She's still a saint in my eyes for showing me around the first day. So, you know, going into grade school, I was still just like a really awkward kid. There was this like, everybody would play, you know, like, everybody just loved to play. Like, that's what you do when you're a kid. But my favorite game was to go in front of this big tire and hide for 30 minutes. I would just hide. And that was like the best 30 minutes of my life, my day. You know, like just to be able to be invisible and to hide and not to have to interact with people or deal with life. And like, that is like the best way that I can explain my spiritual maladies today. That I still deal with, but that I have a solution for today, which is, you know, just incredible. Because I didn't think I would make it past kindergarten. But I did. And I didn't really find anything to help me through it for quite some time. Because I went to a private Catholic all-girls school. So I was not exposed to, you know, any drinking for quite some time. Like, everybody was very, very good. You know, I was actually the bad one. And I would act out in different ways. I found sports, and they helped me cope with things for a little while. But when I got to high school, I started to, you know, act out. And like, I had teachers that pulled me aside and they'd be like, I think you have a learning disability. Or I think, like, there's always, like, something wrong with Kendall. Like, something. We're going to figure this out. And, you know, because Kendall can't act the way that, like, all the other girls are acting. And, you know, I just thought that I was, like, cooler or something. I don't know what I thought. And, you know, I started acting out in ways, like, I got this boyfriend who was in college when I was in high school, and that was, like, so cool. And he was the one who exposed me to my first drink. And I remember it was a vodka and orange juice, and it was more vodka than orange juice, and I just remember I threw it up outside, like, in a moving car. And I remember thinking, this is the best thing. You know, like, I just love this, and I can't wait to have more. And that, you know, I didn't really think that was a problem for a long time. I'm just going to put this out here right now. I'm 32 years old. I know I don't look like it, but I'm Asian. I was good 14-year span where I was like really strong hard. Just so you know, don't underestimate me because I look all cute and sweet. So when I started like really going hard. And this boyfriend in college, he ended up cheating on me. And the way that I found to cope with that was to start drinking. And I remember drinking this like Johnnie Walker scotch and just thinking like, oh my gosh, this helps. You know, this helps. You know, like, I'm hurting, but this helps. And like, for a long time, that was going to be my solution, with the pain of, like, the pain of living, the pain of heartache, the pain of being me. And the pain of being me got worse and worse and worse as I grew, because I just found more ways to block out myself from my higher power through all sorts of resentments, all sorts of fears, all sorts of, you know, self-pity, all sorts of things that blocked me out. Made me into this lunatic who, by the time, okay, so I was in senior week, I spent my entire senior week just like all the girls were partying, laughing, having fun on the beach. I spent that week passed out in the corner, which was cool, but like I had to wake up. I worked as well because I'm like also a alcoholic. So I worked during my senior week. So I go down to the beach, I party all night, and then while everyone went to sleep, I woke up and I went to work. And the problem was that I started noticing I got wasted at work during the day. And now, another problem with that is that I was working at the Senate, where my dad is a senator. So that was like not the best reflection. My dad, and I, you know, I was a horrible daughter. Yeah, I know. Like, oh my gosh. And so, meanwhile, like, one day, one of the other senators found me asleep under this like fancy desk in the caucus room. And she came in and she said, and I was so scared because I was like wasted. And she said, you know what? I won't tell anybody if you could buy me a candy bar. And I'll never forget her. I continued working there. I continued passing out in the stairwell. And, you know, it's amazing. My parents are, like, so forgiving. So, what I put them through. But, so scenery passed, and I thought, like, okay, this is just a phase, you know, just a phase. I'm 18 years old, and I'm going to college. I have a bright future. I got into every school that I applied to. Applied to Syracuse, Virginia Tech, University of Delaware, Florida State, UCLA, and I got into everything. But I chose University of Delaware, which is where I'm from, because I read an article that they're the number one party school in 1999. And they were. And I just thought that was perfect for me, you know. And I got there, and I'll never forget my first day of school. You know, I went to class the first day, and first of all, there were boys in my class, and I was like, what is this? You know, like, because I was an all-girls school in high school, and so I didn't know how to deal with that. But I went to a party that night, and I just remember somebody handed me a drink and a pill, and I didn't know what either of them were, but I was set, and I was like, I am going to love college. Yeah. And that was just my first day. I ended up, my college career lasted me 10 years to graduate. 1999 to 2009. And I ended up getting my degree just by the skin of my teeth, because I'm, you know, workaholic was really ingrained in me, you know, at a young age to work really hard. And, you know, for 10 years, that's a good chunk of time and money and, you know, and then later. So, you know, I was at UD. I met another boy, of course, who was worse than me. I always like to choose someone who were a little bit sicker than me, you know, so that way I could lean it all on them. You know, you're an alcoholic. We even had an intervention for this one guy. And I said, you have a problem. And I sent him away to rehab, and then I went home and there. But yeah, this guy, I thought I was in love with him. And we went out to Colorado a couple times, and out there you could pretty much like do whatever you want out there. A lot of drinking while driving, and almost falling off the cliffs, and you know, just doing things that are pretty scary. As I went on, more and more like, I got all A's my first semester. As I went on in college, I started getting F's. I never got anything in between A and F. So I started getting F's. And I started sailing out, and then I ended up, I would do all these things, you know, I would do a lot of drinking during the day, and a lot of, leaving my chemistry lab to go up to Philly to get what I needed to get and, you know, get wasted, and then I thought that I was the coolest person in the world for that. So that, explains a lot of me being there for 10 years. But after a certain while, it started to really catch up with me, and I ended up feeling suicidal. You know, and in the meantime, I'm like, this is great. I'm suicidal. Does that make sense? It made sense to me because, you know, I was pretty delusional. So I ended up after 3 years. One day, I remember I just, couldn't take it anymore. I was drinking, I was sleeping all day, I was not going to class, and I ended up trying to overdose on pills. This was terrible. And there will be more times. Just wait. They get that. So the first time was Tylenol, and I just remember, that night, I put a sign on my door. I said, don't wake me up, to my roommate. And I was I gave her a gift. I don't know what symbolism that was about, but I was all ooh, this is going to be my death, so let me, make it fancy. And I drank a bottle of scotch, like I always did, took a bottle of pills, and I laid down, and I thought I was going to die. And I remember I prayed the Hail Mary, don't know why, but that's what I did. And I remember this feeling of ease and comfort coming over me as I laid down, ready to die. Crazy. And I really think today that was, my higher power saving me. Because thank God, obviously, spoiler alert, I lived. But, I'm such a nerd sometimes. I think that, my higher power, giving me that sense of ease and comfort for that moment, and I prayed to show me that prayer does work in some way. And I had my stomach pumped that night, and that was all fun. And I took some time off school, and I went to, I took a medical leave of absence, and I decided I'm going to have a new start. I'm going to go to Brooklyn, New York. And I don't have a job, so I'm going to steal $600 from my parents. I'm going to write a check and forge their signature. And then I'm going to get as much drugs and alcohol as I can, bring it up there, and live off of it for as long as I can. $600 is not that much. I lasted a week. And, this is the sort of stuff that I thought I was the only one who did that until I came to AA. I thought I was the only one. And that's crappy. I have these amazing parents, and I was stealing money from them. And they would have given it to me. That's the thing. They would have given it to me, but, I wanted to be some sort of comeback about it. And I went up there, and I freeloaded off of one of my friends who was she's really, really rich, and she just let me do what I want. And so what I wanted to do was get drunk and watch Lord of the Rings every night. So that's what I did every night. And when I ran out of stuff up there, I started calling my old boyfriends to, to come and bring me, stuff, and And I was worrying my parents, and they started calling and, you know, trying to visit. I said, "I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine." And I finally had a job at a bar up there, and I was like, "Oh, perfect." And my parents came up, and they're like, "That's it." They took me home, and they're like, "You're going back to school. This is not good." So I went back to school at the University of Delaware, and this was like 4 years in or so. And I keep drinking, and I keep doing what I'm doing. And, you know, my parents are at their wit's end. And I went to Pace. It's this little place. And I went in and out of Meadowood and, you know, all these, like, mental institutions. And then I ended up going to Pace, which is an alcohol counseling outpatient program in Delaware. And I thought I would, like, really wanted it at this point. And I really did. And I ended up showing up every day. I don't know. I kept nodding out. Like, during groups, I was just, you know, just not out. And I thought that that was okay. Like, that was a part of, like, I don't know what I thought. But I was really upset because they ended up calling my parents and saying, you know, "We're going to need you to get some better care, maybe inpatient somewhere." And so we scheduled an appointment for a family session to do this. And the minute before I ended up getting completely wasted and using other things that really reacted badly. And I ended up going to the family session completely wasted. And it was funny because it's like we have, I read in the big book somewhere, and I stopped at paraphrasing the big book, but like, so we have a particular knack for, you know, getting tight at the wrong time or just the right time, you know. And like, right when I was like really wanting to prove to my parents that like, I got this, I show up wasted. And so, you know, that was a sort of a pivotal moment for us, and we were like, okay. They were like, "Well, we're already going to suggest you go to this place called Five Mountains, actually, in Maryland, so why don't you just go, you know, why don't you just..." And so I surrendered for a second, and I went. But I only surrendered for a second, because when I got there, I was like, no, you know, like, this is too much. Like, I was sober for a day, and I'm like, this is too much to face. Like, I can't. It's me now. It's just me, you know. And I got there, and the first thing I did was I found a guy. And I was like, this will make me feel better. And I remember so well, we were in the Medline. It was so And we locked eyes, and it was like, time to sit still. And I was like, "I know you kicked out of this place." And we did. We got each other kicked out after 7 days. And I was sore. I was like, this is it. Like, this is my true love. This is going to save me from me. And, you know, I really thought that Daniel W. was going to save me from me. And what's crazy is we ended up staying together for 5 years. But these were an awful 5 years because I was a dry drunk. I stayed sober for 3 of them. 3 of those years, I was, you know, completely sober. But it was on my own self-will, and I was a crazy person. I was not working any steps. I didn't know anything about AA. And within that time period, I managed to drive this poor guy crazy. I don't know if he was a full alcoholic, but I know that I am. So I stayed sober for 3 years, and then I had another suicide attempt while I was sober, because they, you know, when I'm sober, that's when, like, the real problem is. That's when I'm, like, really bugging out. Like, when I'm drinking, that was my solution. So, when I was sober, no bueno. I ended up, trying to tell myself again. But this time, because I'm smart, I'm like, I'm going to do the calculations and find out exactly how much will come in. And I did just that, and it was a very scary attempt. And I ended up having to be on dialysis this time for 8 hours. Like, they had to pump my blood in and out, and the levels just kept pumping back up, and it was crazy. And I really thought I was going to die. I mean, the thing that I guess I would want to relate to you guys about that is that, you know, when we're sober and we're not working stuff, like, you can be so crazy. And I was in so much pain, and I was just, like, toughing it up, you know, and every day I wanted to do what I ended up doing. So, I got out of the hospital and the ICU for a week, and I will never forget the nurses in the ICU. Oh my gosh, they were some amazing people. They saved my life. You know, I'll never forget what it's like to be a patient and the little things that they did for me, and it really affected my life. And turns out one of my friends from high school, her mom was a psych nurse, and so that was awkward, but, you know. So, let's see. Okay, so I have 3 years sober, and I decided to go to Italy. And in Italy, I said, well, I've been sober 3 years. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. That's like the worst thing that an alcoholic can think, you know. It's like I didn't do the first step. And so I was like, maybe I can have a glass of wine with my dinner. And I truly thought, like, that I could have one glass of wine. And I am so glad I had this experience looking back, because I have no doubt today that I'm an alcoholic. No doubt. Because, okay, so I had my spaghetti, and I had my glass of wine, and somehow that turned into me drinking Johnny Walker on the street, in bed. And smoking weed. But I don't know how that happened. Like, how the same night. Like, I can't put anything in my system without that, like, crazy phenomenon of crazy. And I was on a study abroad, and everybody was like, I don't like this girl, you know, and I didn't really like me. But when I drank, I remember thinking, I am awesome. So I took some selfies that night. I remember, like, I called Dan, my boyfriend, my rehab roommate, and I called him, and I was like, Dan, what's up? I'm going to Italy, and I was like, I'm drunk. And he said that night I broke his heart. And that was just the beginning of me spending the next 2 years of our relationship just running it into the ground, just ruining it. I ended up, the first night, I ended up hooking up with some Italian dude, Fred Drico or something. I don't know. But, you know, like, that's what I do. That's what a glass of wine turns into for me. And I am so glad that I had that experience, because I will never again say, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. So I got that first step down. I mean, hopefully. I don't want to say never again, but each day, that experience totally helped me. So I went home from Italy. Oh, Dan flew out there because he was like, I'm going to save her, you know. He flew out to Italy to meet with me, and he, I didn't drink the whole time he was there. And I was like, see? Not an alcoholic. And then he had to catch the plane ride home early because he couldn't get the flight back with me. And that night, I learned a lot of Dom Perignon on my roommate's credit card. who does that? I couldn't even laugh with the day that he flew out. Like, I just can't. And it had to be after night. Because I wasn't paying for it. You know, because I felt selfish, I am. So I spent the next couple of years, you know, with that and all that stuff. I guess I should speed it up a little bit, but obviously a lot of things happened to me in my drinking career. But none of that, like, ended up helping me. What brought me in this time in June 1st, 2010 was, for I knows my character defects, and men are women. And I was dating this guy who I was saying he's an alcoholic, he has problems. I brought him to a meeting to show him what he needed to do. And I sat there with him with my head held high, saying, you look what you need to do, and I'll sit here while you do it. And I ended up, like, I started crying in the middle of the meeting because these people were talking, and I realized I am an alcoholic, you know, and I need help. And there were these women in the meeting, and they were sitting there, and I ended up going up to them, and I said, I need a sponsor, and they were so happy, you know, and I really hated them. She said, I'll be your sponsor. I will never forget, and I was like, I was talking to the other girl. She's still my sponsor today, and she saved my life. This girl is amazing. She walked me through the 12 steps, and, you know, despite my crazy self, despite all the stuff that I put her through, she showed me love when I wasn't able to love myself. And she's my best friend today. And, you know, gosh, I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed. I'm a completely different person. But what they had to do was they put me into detox. They went over to my parents' house, and my parents were furious, and I was doing what I was doing. I'm full-time, drinking with Johnny Walker. I had already gone to this meeting, but then I decided I'm going to drink again. And I was sitting on my porch, and I was drinking, and, Lindsay was doing working with others with a sponsee, and she decided, I called her, and I was like, oh, help. And she said, you know what, instead of talking about working with others, I'm going to bring you to this girl's house, and we're going to work with others. And she showed her sponsee how to work with others on me. And I didn't know what was going on. I remember that night, it was a long, drawn-out thing. I ended up pouring out the rest of my drink, which I think was an act of God, like, because I don't remember really doing it. But I had this, like, little bit of willingness, and my parents were furious. They thought I was an angel. They were, like, in denial. They were like, she doesn't need help. You guys are a bunch of amateurs. You AA people, just go, you know. I ended up going to detox for 7 days and then leaving and then going into AA, and I just I worked the first through third steps in this lady Paula's house, and it was amazing, and I didn't know what we were talking about, and I didn't know what they wanted from me, and I was like, I'm not giving these people money, you know, and they were just like, look, you know, clearly I had the first step, and I knew I was an alcoholic. The second step, I was pretty good with God, but I didn't know, like, I was good with the God that I was raised to believe. So that was a whole other thing, putting that aside, all those prejudices. And, you know, my sponsor helped me put that aside and learn how to find a God of my own understanding, which, oh my gosh, I wish you guys knew my God, because he is amazing. And, you know, so I did a third step, and I do this prayer every day, today. In the morning, I say the third step prayer, and it helps me get me out of me, because I am so selfish. I am, you know, crazy selfish. I did my fourth step with my sponsor, and she was like, gave me this very simple direction, and I ended up writing out my own directions for it. And, you know, it had to be more complicated than what that book says. You know, it can't be that simple. So I wrote out my own directions, and I got this golden notebook and fancy pens, and like, made it really nice. And I was so proud. Like, it was 47 pages, and I brought it to her, and I was like, I am here to shop. And she ripped it apart. And she was like, Kendall, follow the directions in the book. So I did another full step, and I put her on it, ripping up my first one. But it was very plainly written. It was four columns, really, really simple. And, you know, I went through it with her, and I found out some things about myself that, I had always thought I was really awesome. I'm like really not, like really selfless, like a really good thing. The Kendall is, you know, just a saint. But no, I'm not. And it was freeing to find these things out. Like, you would think you want to find these things out, but it's freeing. Because once I found out, I could actually do something about it. And I constantly turn things over to God. And I'm constantly working. You know, 10, 11, and 12. And I don't do it perfectly. And I'm, you know, complete work in progress. Sometimes, like, it can be a mess, especially when I'm doing some inventory that I can't quite let go of yet. But I'm really, really grateful that my sponsor helped me work on these things. And I was lucky because I was super crazy when I came in here. From what I hear, like, people tell me, people were like, yeah, we were gonna help you. You know, we were gonna give up on you. And now I'm like, I see why. But I'm so glad that they didn't. And I had some really amazing like spiritual advisors when I was first coming in. This guy is with me now. He came up today to support me, helped me through so much. And while I was getting sober, I went through, you know when you're drunk and you make bad choices and then you get sober and you have to face those consequences? Well, that's what happened to me, because when I was drunk, I was dating an abusive guy who I thought was a perfect match, you know? And when I got sober and started doing some step work and he continued to, you know, do what he did, I realized that I needed to stand up for myself and love myself and leave him. And he didn't want that. And he said, I'm going to stop you. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get a restraining order from him my first 4 months into sobriety. And like, that's a lot to deal with when you're getting sober. And I share this because I've met a lot of women who make these choices when they're sober and they don't think, or when they're, you know, drinking and they get sober and they don't think that they can come out of it. And men too. Like, and I just think that, you know, you can, when you're getting sober, it's the time for change and it's the time to turn around, to let go of all of these things. And I was able to do that. And with the help of my sponsor and my spiritual advisors and my friends, I was able to go to court and, you know, do what I had to do. Not really for me. It was for the next person that he was with so that he won't do that again. But I was able to do that, and it really taught me something about loving myself. And AA has been a huge lesson in loving myself, because I had no idea how much I hated myself. Like, I thought I was awesome, but I also thought I was so low, like the worst, you know. They say like the egomaniac is the inferiority complex, and that was so me. And so one of my biggest character defects was self-pity and also pride. those were two of them. And you would think, like, those are two opposites. Like, pride is like, I think I'm awesome. Self-pity is like, I think I'm the worst. And those were going through at the same time when I first got sober. And I had to deal with those feelings. And every day, I asked God to remove them. And every day I woke up, and I was like, I woke up and my first thoughts were, you are terrible. Don't go to work. Don't go to school. You're a loser. You probably are sick and dying, and something's wrong with you. Nobody likes you. Like, that's my head. That's the spiritual malady. And that's what caused me to drink. And that's what I need to work on a daily basis so that I'm not leading, I'm not going to the drink. Because I have two choices. I can either, you know, seek alcohol, or I can seek the solution. And I choose to seek the solution. And it has been more powerful than any drink that I've ever had. And gosh, I wish I could, like, relay that to you guys. I mean, I'm sure there's been experience after experience that I've seen of my friends who have gotten sober, who have, like, had these same experiences. But I guess I can talk about what it's like today. It ends at 9? Is that what it means? Okay. Today, I'm really happy. Today I can stand in front of a group of people. I'm sweating a little bit, but I'm not like, I don't hate myself, you know. Like, I love who I am, and love that I can share this story without feeling all that pain that was associated with it. I haven't, you know, had a drink in a few years, but even more than that, I've had friends that have, like, not left me on the side of the road. And not only that, but they'll, like, come with me to the meetings. They'll, you know, let me live with them. They'll give me their TVs and their, you know, when I was moving into a place and I didn't have a place, I got a bed, king size. And people were like, you must be rich. And I was like, yeah, I'm rich. But really, I just have friends in my head. So, you know, it was awesome. And I have these amazing friendships. And I have a relationship with myself, but mostly I have a relationship with my higher power. And I'm like in love with my God. Like, I used to be in love with this guy and that guy and this drink or that drink or both drinks together. And, you know, now I'm in love with my God. And if my God wants me to do something, I do it today. And I trust. And I walk through the fear, like, I like being up here, you know, or going back to school. So I decided to go back to school for nursing, and I'm in nursing school right now, and I just got into clinicals. I start January 1st, and it's been, like, a real, like, it's been, like, I totally know this is what I'm meant to do, because my whole life I've been struggling with, what am I meant to be doing? You know, I'm working at the mall, I'm working here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And now I feel every day like I have a purpose. I go into school and I'm like, this is my purpose. And it might be really hard, and I might be, like, you know, studying just, like, nonstop, and I might be losing sleep, but every day I'm living with a purpose. And that is, like, the coolest gift. Like, who, you know, I never thought I would get that. And, like, I always think about those nurses when I was in the hospital, when I was in the ICU, and like, the way that they talked to me, and the way that they treated me, the way that I felt when I thought I was dying. Like, there's no other feeling when you think you're dying, and a nurse is there, and they help you. And just like the little things, like when they put their hand on you, or when they look at you and say, it's going to be okay. Or when you can tell that they're really smart and they know they've got it covered. And like, so I went to my first clinical experience this summer. And my review said, My teacher said that I have this like gift of compassion, and she said that I somehow know what it's like to like be a patient, and I didn't tell her. It's a gift, you know. But I know what it's like, and I can tell that God's using my experiences to help others, and that's like so cool. And I couldn't have planned out any better myself. So I've got into the accelerated program. Only like 14 people get in. It's really competitive, and I don't even know how that happened, but it's been super easy. Like, I just do what AA tells me. I show up on time, which I never did. You suit up and you show up, like they say, and I'm present in the moment, which I never was. And magically, when you're present in the moment, you're able to like do really well at finding, you know. When you're not constantly swirling around in your head thinking about me and my thoughts, and what do I want, and what do I need, and what do I, blah, 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 blah. Like, when that quiets down, first of all, you don't need to drink. I mean, I don't need to drink, because that's the reason I drank, was to quiet that down. But when that quiets down, you can do anything. You know, and your life is really good. I moved back in with my parents, because that's what, you know, I'm trying to be financially responsible, and they are so happy because I'm just, they're little princess, and they're awesome. And, like, our relationship, holy cow. Our relationship has changed, like, so much. You know, I used to leave running out of the house screaming, D-head at my dad, like, I can't do that, you know, but I'm just like, you know, I'm full of breath, and now I'm like, hey, how are you doing, you know, I didn't know those are things you ask people, like, I didn't know all those things when I was drinking, I missed out, like, on a lot of life skills, and, like, AA people are teaching me, like, how to ask, like, hey, how are you doing? To ask about other people. And like, you would be amazed how much that changes a relationship. You know? I was. So my parents are, like, so proud of me, and they tell me that, like, every day, all the time. And I don't, like, when I first got sober, I was, like, they were, like, questioning me, like, are you sober? And I was like, oh my God, really? I've been sober a week. And now, like, I've learned to show in my actions and not in my words. And so I show them. And I haven't reminded them that I'm in AA for a couple years now. Like, I just go and I do what I need to do. And I show up and I be the best daughter I can be. And I bring God into the situation. And they are, like, blown out of the water proud of me. And that is, like, the biggest gift of AA. I've probably said that a couple times about a couple things, because there's been so many gifts of AA. So, that's crazy. So, I guess 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. Not that bad to end off. So, I'm just going to end it here. Thank you so much.